I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
I think after what happened yesterday morning when we hear about the six bodies that they came back, I think everybody feel like they have to do something.
Hundreds of thousands of Israelis, including family members of hostages, take to the streets of Israel to demand Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accept a ceasefire deal with Hamas. We'll go to Tel Aviv to speak with Israeli peace activist Yonatan Zeigen, son of Canadian-Israeli peace activist Vivian Silver, killed on October 7th. We'll also talk to Haaretz columnist Gideon Levy. Then, over 10,000 hotel workers go on strike across the United States to demand raises, fair workloads, and respect. We'll speak with a striking hotel room attendant and the local president of the union Unite here in San Francisco. Finally, it was 2005 when a U.S. military convoy in Haditha, Iraq, drove over an IED, killing a Marine. The Marines responded by raiding houses, killing 24 Iraqis, civilian men, women, and children still in their nightclothes. Now the New Yorker has published photographs from that massacre. We'll speak with reporter Madeline Barron about the Haditha massacre photos the military didn't want the world to see.
It was important for us to obtain these photos because these photos are evidence of what happened that day in Haditha. These photos show men, women, and children, many of them in defenseless positions, some of them even cowered on a bed, and many of them shot in the head. So this was incredibly important evidence that we thought it was important for the public to see.
The photos are part of the investigative podcast series In the Dark. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In the Gaza Strip, at least eight Palestinians were killed in an Israeli strike earlier today as they lined up for bread. The attack struck the front of a UN-operated school being used to shelter thousands of displaced people in the Jabalia refugee camp. The massacre followed the killing of 11 Palestinians Sunday in an Israeli attack on the Safad school in Gaza City. Rescue workers say a woman and a girl were among those killed.
The occupation forces have struck the western wing of the school, resulting in numerous deaths and injuries among the displaced civilians sheltering there. We are witnessing a true massacre and extremely harrowing scenes. Civil defense and medical teams are working to recover bodies and save as many lives as possible. But the situation is deeply tragic, and the reality we face here is extremely difficult.
United Nations and Palestinian health authorities have administered tens of thousands of doses of the polio vaccine to Palestinian children across the Gaza Strip. The mass vaccination campaign began Sunday after Israel agreed to limited pauses in its attacks to allow the campaign to go ahead. This is UN spokesperson Louise Wateridge.
We had the first rain yesterday afternoon. It was a pretty torrential downpour for the best part of an hour. And it's just huge warning for what winter will bring. The sewage water was flooding the streets. Everybody here sleeping on the floor, you know, the shelters aren't waterproof.
In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces have returned the body of a Palestinian man who died less than 2 hours after the Israeli military arrested him. Family members and medical workers say there are clear signs that 58-year-old Ayman Abed was tortured and badly beaten in Israeli custody after he was detained Monday in the village of Kafr Dan. Meanwhile, residents of Jenin are reporting shortages of food, water, power, and medicine as Israeli troops lay siege to the city and its refugee camp. Earlier today, the Israeli army also raided the West Bank city of Tulkarm, killing a 14-year-old Palestinian boy. In more news from the West Bank, Israeli soldiers fired live rounds at Palestinian journalists documenting Israel's days-long deadly raid on Jenin. Israeli soldiers were also seen chasing and attempting to ram the group of journalists with an armored military bulldozer as the Israeli army destroyed shops, streets, homes, and other infrastructure. At least two journalists were injured in the attack. Meanwhile, in Gaza, the 19-year-old beloved TikTok star Mohamed Meydou Halimi was killed in an Israeli airstrike on Khan Yunis Friday. He'd walked to his local internet cafe, a tent with Wi-Fi, to meet a friend and collaborator when he was struck and began bleeding from the head. Halimi died in a hospital a few hours later. He began uploading videos to TikTok and Instagram in May, documenting life in Gaza and Israel's relentless war. In Israel, hundreds of thousands of protesters flooded the streets of Tel Aviv and other major cities Sunday after the Israeli army announced it recovered the bodies of six Israeli hostages held by Hamas in Gaza. Israel says the hostages were shot by Hamas. Hamas says they were killed by Israeli airstrikes. The discovery of their deaths prompted Israel's labor federation, Histadrut, to call a general strike to demand a ceasefire agreement that would secure the remaining hostages held by Hamas. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu remained defiant despite the protests. On Monday, he insisted he will not agree to any deal unless Israel maintains control of the Philadelphia corridor along Gaza's border with Egypt.
The axis of evil needs the Philadelphia corridor, and for that reason, we must control the Philadelphia corridor. Hamas insists for that reason that we not be there, and for that reason, I insist that we be there.
After headlines, we'll go to Israel for the latest. The United Kingdom has suspended some arms exports to Israel, citing a risk that they might be used to commit serious violations of international humanitarian law. On Monday, Foreign Secretary David Lammy told the parliament the partial arms ban would not cut off the flow of most weapons from the UK to Israel, including parts for F-35 fighter jets.
This is not an arms embargo. It targets around 30, approximately 350. Licenses to Israel in total for items which could be used in the current conflict in Gaza. The rest will continue.
In a statement, the British group Global Justice Now said, quote, under huge pressure, the government is waking up to the fact that it must stop arming Israel. But this is a half-baked ban which risks maintaining UK complicity in war crimes. You wouldn't deal with a dangerous arsonist by having their petrol supply, they said. In Iraq, the U.S. military says seven of its soldiers were injured last week in a joint raid with Iraqi forces that the Pentagon says killed 15 fighters with the Islamic State group. Iraqi officials say Thursday's raid destroyed four hideouts used by ISIS, along with weapons and ammunition. Meanwhile, the New Yorker magazine has published images of the U.S. Marines' 2005 massacre of Iraqi civilians in the town of Haditha. The graphic images show many of the victims were shot in the head at close range. Release of the photos comes 19 years after the massacre, and only after producers of the investigative podcast In the Dark sued the Navy, the Marine Corps, and U.S. Central Command to force them to turn over the photos and other records. Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with Madeline Barron, lead reporter for In the Dark, who traveled to Haditha to meet with family members of the victims of the killing, many women and children. In Ukraine, at least 47 people were injured on Sunday when a Russian missile struck a shopping mall and sports center in the northeastern city of Kharkiv. Seven children were wounded. That attack came just 2 days after another Russian strike on Kharkiv hit a residential building and a playground, killing seven people and injuring 77 others. A 14-year-old girl was among the dead. Russian cruise missile attacks prompted air raid alerts in Kyiv and other major cities overnight following a similar barrage on Monday. Meanwhile, students in the Russian city of Belgorod, near the border with Ukraine, opened the new school year Monday with online classes after a Ukrainian attack destroyed a childcare center. Belgorod's governor said a separate weekend attack by Ukraine killed five people and wounded 46 others, including children. Ukraine is continuing its incursion into Russia's Kursk region, even as Russia's military continues to gain territory in Ukraine's east. The Biden administration seized a plane belonging to the Venezuelan president, Nicolas Maduro, claiming the purchase of the aircraft violated U.S. sanctions. The plane, which was seized in the Dominican Republic, was allegedly bought for $13 million through a shell company, then smuggled out of the United States, according to the U.S. Justice Department. Maduro's government condemned the move as an act of piracy. This comes as tensions remain high following July's contested presidential election in Venezuela. Venezuelan authorities have issued an arrest warrant for Edmundo González, the opposition presidential candidate the U.S. and allies have recognized as the winner of the election. This is Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro.
Este señor cobarde, González Urrutia, se da el tupé de decir que no.
This cowardly man, González Urrutia, has the nerve to say that he doesn't recognize any of our institutions. That is why the majority of the people who live in Venezuela agree that laws should work, that there must be order. The Constitution should be respected, and public government institutions should do their work.
And more than 10,000 hotel workers across 25 hotels in nine U.S. cities walked out on strike over the Labor Day holiday weekend, demanding higher wages and better staffing levels. These strikes come after months of fruitless contract talks between Unite Here and hotel chains, including Hilton, Hyatt and Marriott. Union President Gwen Mills said in a statement, quote, "We won't accept a new normal where hotel companies profit by cutting their offerings to guests and abandoning their commitments to workers," she said. Later in the broadcast, we'll speak with a striker in California and the local union president in San Francisco. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
The Israeli army's discovery of six dead Israeli hostages in tunnels in Rafah in southern Gaza has spurred some of the largest protests Israel has seen since October 7th. Israel says the hostages were killed by Hamas. Hamas says they were killed by Israeli airstrikes, not far from where a seventh hostage was found alive last week. On Sunday and Monday, grief and anger spilled onto the streets as hundreds of thousands of Israelis in Jerusalem and Tel Aviv and other cities, along with hostage families, demanded Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu accept a ceasefire deal with Hamas to secure the release of all remaining hostages. This is demonstrator Michal Chaspi, whose nephew Alon Ohel was taken hostage October 7th.
So many people came. I met people that never came before. They came for the first time. I think after what happened yesterday morning when we hear about the six bodies that came back, I think everybody feel like they have to do something. And I think it's one of the reasons that so many people came out from home and came to say their words, that they want all the adopted to come back home.
A rare general strike was called by Histadrut. It was held across Israel on Monday. Meanwhile, thousands of mourners gathered at the funeral of the Israeli-American hostage Hirsch Goldberg Polan, whose body was among those retrieved from southern Gaza. Hirsch's father, John Polan, said he hoped his son's death would not be in vain and instead lead to the release of the remaining 101 hostages still held captive in Gaza.
Hirsch, we failed you. We all failed you. You would not have failed you. You would have pushed harder for justice. You would have worked to understand the other, to bridge differences. You would have challenged more people to challenge their own thinking. And what you would be pushing for now is to ensure that your death, the deaths of all the soldiers, and so many innocent civilians are not lishav, not in vain.
Despite the protests calling for a ceasefire, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu pushed back Monday, rejecting the terms of a deal that would remove Israeli troops from southern Gaza. Netanyahu begged for forgiveness for not bringing the six hostages home alive.
I told the families, and I say it again this evening, I ask for your forgiveness for not succeeding in bringing them back alive. We were close, but we didn't succeed. And I also say this evening, Israel will not accept this massacre. Hamas will pay a very high price for that.
Even Netanyahu's defense minister, Yoav Gallant, is disagreeing with Netanyahu, saying he will not agree to a ceasefire unless Israeli soldiers can stay in the Philadelphia corridor. From where we go to Tel Aviv, where we're joined by two guests. Gideon Levy is an award-winning Israeli author and journalist, columnist for the newspaper Haaretz, member of its editorial board. And Yonatan Zeigen is an Israeli peace activist, trained mediator and social worker, son of the renowned Canadian-Israeli peace activist Vivian Silver, who was killed on October 7th during the Hamas attack on her kibbutz, Kibbutz Be'eri, where she lived. He has said his mother had a plan for peace for Israel and the Palestinians before she was killed. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Yonatan, let's begin with you in Tel Aviv. Can you describe the scene of the hundreds of thousands of Israelis, a number of them family members of hostages still in Gaza, demanding that Netanyahu agree to a ceasefire deal?
Well, being on the streets with so many people and with that energy is very powerful on the one hand. On the other, it's filled with despair because you know that our politicians won't listen to anything because they're driven out of self-interest. So in that sense, it's you feel the energy, you feel the solidarity, but also the hopelessness.
And Yonatan, do you believe these latest deaths of the six hostages were preventable? If so, why? And do you see that the latest protests are some sort of a turning point in Israel?
All of the deaths were preventable. October 7th was preventable as well. If we would have pursued peace years ago, if we would seek partners, Palestinian partners, instead of strengthening fundamentalists, if we would have not strengthened our own fundamentalists and put them in government, then October 7th wouldn't have happened to begin with. And since then, if we wouldn't have gone into this atrocious war, and if we would sought diplomacy and the help of the international community and go to the PA in Saudi Arabia and the United States and ask, this is, we're willing to do 1, 2, 3 in order to create a new reality here. And we ask for Hamas to be driven out. Then we would have gotten that. And all of the deaths would have been prevented and the hostages would have been brought home. Is it a turning point? Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I started to say, is it a turning point? One should hope. But, you know, people relate, you know, they anchor themselves in personal stories. And we woke up on Sunday to a very harsh and heartbreaking story of the six hostages being killed. Will it fuel a relentless protest that will be strong enough to bring a government down or to make it change their policy? I'm not sure.
And Gideon Levy, I'd like to pose that question to you. Do you think that these protests are a turning point? They're certainly the largest since the October 7th attack.
I can't agree more with Jonathan. I'll be just more harsh as usual. I doubt it very much. It cannot be a turning point as long as it is only this kind of protest. First of all, most of the protests, if not all of it, has nothing to do with the political base of Benjamin Netanyahu. And therefore, he did ignore it until now, and he can continue to ignore it as long as it doesn't penetrate to his own base. And his own base, I must say, is still very solid and the protests did not penetrate there. And secondly, we have to remember that this kind of protest cannot last for long, because it's a very partial protest. It's only a protest about the hostages, and the hostages is a huge subject. It's a huge tragedy. It's a huge catastrophe. People lost everything. People lost their lives. Innocent people, wonderful people like Vivian and many, many others. But this protest ignores totally the Palestinian victims. And as long as it ignores totally, but really totally, the 40,000 people, then killing of six gets different proportions and cannot fuel a protest for a long time.
Gideon Levy, can you explain what the Philadelphia corridor is? And talk about the fact that Israel didn't have it before, what Netanyahu is, why he's resisting removing soldiers from there, even disagreeing. I mean, they're both being investigated for war crimes, both he and Yoav Gallant, his defense minister, right at The Hague. But Gallant is even saying that this is not necessary. And how is this the same question that Juan asked Yonatan, a real turning point, this level of mass protest with the strikes called on top of it?
So first, about the Philadelphia corridor, we will not bother your viewers too much, Amy, because nobody heard about the Philadelphia corridor as such a huge, fatal subject until 1-2 weeks ago. I'll tell you more than this. I'm almost convinced that if the issue of the Philadelphia corridor will be solved, Netanyahu will find a new thing to sabotage any kind of settlement. This man does not believe, and I give him the credit that it is ideological and maybe not only personal, but he doesn't believe in any diplomacy with the Palestinians. He never did. He never did believe in any kind of settlement with the Palestinians, only living on sword, only living on our military power. This was his ideology, and it continues now. He will not end this war now, even if the Philadelphia corridor, for your viewers, it's a piece of land which is on the border between Egypt and the Gaza Strip. Netanyahu claims, rightly so, that many arms were smuggled through the tunnels in the Philadelphia corridor. But I would like to remind the Prime Minister that the big attack on Israel did not come from the Philadelphia corridor. It came from the most protected border between Israel and the Gaza Strip, the most invested border, the most sophisticated border. So it's really ridiculous. It's looking for excuses why to say no to stop the war. And as it's about your question about turning point, it depends on the coming days. I mean, if the coming days will gain momentum, it might become a turning point, but I have my doubts because, as I said before, the protests in Israel until now is limited to a very specific part of the population. It makes a lot of impression from the outside to see those hundreds of thousands of people gathering in Tel Aviv, but they are not the face of Israel, for sure not the majority of Israelis.
I wanted to turn to one of the protesters in Tel Aviv this weekend, Itai Sela, a retired Israeli army veteran with two sons in the Israeli army.
The government of Israel is a threat to the world peace. It's a dictatorship run by one-man show. And Israel has 200 nuclear armaments. And the way Netanyahu is a world chaos agent, like Donald Trump, is a threat to the world peace. He doesn't care about the hostages.
So, Yonatan Zeigen, you were in the streets of Tel Aviv as well. You and your brother have lost your beloved mother, beloved by so many, not only in Israel, but around the world, as a longtime peace activist. Vivian Silver died on October 7th when Hamas raided her kibbutz. You talk about a plan she had before she was killed. Do you agree with Gideon that the hundreds of thousands of Israelis are only focused on the hostages calling for a ceasefire, or that there is some recognition of the horror that is taking place in Gaza as well now as the West Bank?
There is some, but it's not enough. When I come to the streets, I stand with the block against the occupation or the people who want to end the war. But we are very, very few there. Because there is no link in Israeli society between what was before October 7th and the war since, and what is happening in the West Bank. They don't make the link between that and between our situation, our dire situation here with the hostages and in general, the dire state of our country. And it's sad because we have to make that link. It's a blind spot of ours, but a root of our problems is the lack of diplomacy for so long, the continuation of the expansion project of the settler movement, the occupation, a ruthless use of force and the siege of Gaza. This is the root of our problem. Our security issues and October 7th were symptoms of that. And as long as we don't treat that problem together, you know, we need a signal from the international community as well in order for us to understand that this is a problem needs solving. But as long as we don't do that, then we're doomed.
And I'd like to ask Gideon Levy, do you think at this point that the only thing that can stop Netanyahu is a decision by the Biden administration to cut off arms to Israel?
Yes, but I don't see this decision being made. We are dealing with science fiction, I'm afraid. The Biden administration played a very weird role in this war. On one hand, the heart was in the right place. I'm sure President Biden cared a lot about the suffer of Gaza, about the humanitarian situation. He was shocked, as many others in the world, from what Israel is doing there. But at the same time, he supplied all the weapons and the munitions to commit all those crimes. So I really don't know. If you want someone to stop a war, you supply him with more arms and more ammunition? I don't know this kind of logic. If President Biden would have really liked to put an end to this war, he could have done it within days by stopping or at least conditioning the supply of arms and ammunition to Israel. He didn't do it. He was far from doing it. And therefore, all the other requests, the condemnations, remarks are totally hollow.
Let's put that in our last question to Yonatan Zeigen. The significance of the U.S. in leading to a ceasefire and what President Biden has done, what he should do at this point.
I think the United States and the international community in general plays a crucial role. They were actively enabling our status quo here before, and they are actively enabling the war now. And it's rooted in the web of interests that were spun for years. And I think the administration has to create a new web of interests that does not rely on weapons and military, but on economy and tourism and trade routes. And I expected the Biden administration and the international community to establish a new international alliance that has a